Just for clarification, did you mean that the 34-count case in which Donald Trump was found guilty of various financial crimes was politically motivated here in New York?
I found that when the judicial system gets weaponized and targeted political enemies for political gain, I think that's inappropriate, and I think that degrades our collective trust in this a very important institution, whether that's on a Democratic going after a Republican or a Republican going after a Democratic one. And I like to think I call it strikes and balls, because the judicial system has to remain impartial. I mean, that's really the cornerstone of our society.
When Fetterman could talk, and the things he said was completely different than this new Fetterman. Fetterman goes out there now, and all of his talking points are neocon, basically Israeli Likudnik talking points. So I think a PR firm, with whatever's happened to him, when he disappeared for 8-9 months, he's come back, and now he reads exact Mark Levin talking points in live time. So this is a major scandal, folks.
Opinions have become actual real news. And we've lost that ability. Like opinions are not news.
Right.
You know, and there are so many points out there in the world now. Like, why are people still talking about Tucker Carlson? Are any of these people? Now, even Alex Jones now is back. You know, I have to see that in my feed anymore. You know, why? Because if they are criticizing Trump, it's like now sometimes we in the Democrats say, well, maybe they have a point. You know, MTG Crazy Pants. Why are we keep hearing about her now?
Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Yeah. So what I'm saying, it's like, you know, like focusing on real news and the real dynamic there. You know, I'm so tired of opinions have become news. And now there's countless ones,
right,
and it's all become slop.
And let me just make the point. This is a. This is an entertainment show.
It says right. Real
on it on an.
It's not even the title.
It is. Yeah. Because it's a lot more real than that other. Let me tell you.
You have the washed up Dan Crenshaw, who people thought was a conservative until they actually looked at his voting record. But the Democrats half the time. You've got zombie Fetterman, and you've got Bill Maher that, you know, it's overall a well-written show, well done. It still has 3 or 4 million viewers. That's still small. You had Johnny Carson with 40 million, back when there were only 200 million people in the country.
People say he'll never take a serious controversy. Well, I have an answer to that. I said, now, tell me the last time that Jack Benny, Red Skelton, any comedian, used his show to do serious issues. That's not what I'm there for. Can't they see that? But you're not. Why do they think that just because you have a Tonight Show that you must deal in serious issues? That's a danger. It's a real danger. Once you start that, you start to get that self-important feeling that what you say has great import. And you know, strangely enough, you could use that show as a forum. You could sway people. And I don't think you should as an entertainer.
You have the Democrat senator and all these other people with the same talking points saying, don't listen to Alex Jones and Tucker Carlson and MTG. Listen to us. They're fake news. We're real. Well, what has been fake here? I show you a clip. You decide for yourself. 99% of what we do is just commentary on things that are going on, and I predict of what I think is going to happen, and I'm almost always right. That's what they don't like. There's articles and videos and my own notes about those videos that I'm going to play. That's it. I'm the captain of this ship. Dems accept someone like Alex Jones if they're anti-Trump. Let's be clear. Democrats don't listen to my show. They might watch clips. They don't buy anything from me. But I don't tailor what I say to an audience. I say what I believe is right, and then people that think that has value tune in. You guys tailor what you say off the system and the establishment so they keep thinking I think like them. No, I'm who I am. I'm like a restaurant owner that's a chef. These are the foods I like. This is the stuff I think is tasty and delicious. This is what I cook, and I have confidence in what we put on our menu, and if you like it, you like it. And guess what? If we're a restaurant, we got lines around the block. These guys don't. make a massive announcement right now. I mean, this is just bonker town. What it does is just... I feel 20 years younger. I'm not kidding you. Ultra Methylene Blue.
I know. I love it. This stuff works, man.
I just can't shut up about it. Ultra Methylene Blue. I mean, this is just bonker town.
I know. I love it.
I just can't shut up about it. Ultra Methylene Blue. I just can't shut up about it. Get yours now at thealexjonesstore.com. It is just beyond spectacular.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live today on the Alex Jones Network. Remember, you can always find us at alexjoneslive.com, on Rumble as well, at rumble.com/TheAlexJonesShowLive. That's where you find us there. And I've heard that we're gonna have our own dedicated Rumble channel very soon, so stay tuned for that. I think we've earned it. I think we deserve it. A Rumble channel of our own. But really, there's like a million Rumble channels because some people upload our stuff just on their own volition. There's lots of outlets. I don't even want to say some of them because we like that they operate with or without our permission. It's all free to air after all. But we need a home base. We need one place to send everybody to, especially since, you know, we're planning on, I at least am spearheading this. Whether the crew is aware or not, I'm not sure. But I want to start including the Rumble chat more into the show, whether it'll be with super chats or the crew highlighting comments and questions that they can put up on screen for me to answer. I think that would be very fun and very helpful. So we got a lot of news today. Big show for you here on the 12th of May, 2026. And we're going to start with the latest breaking news from Donald Trump. He, of course, is on his way to China. Big delegation of big tech leaders coming along with him, which is interesting because obviously this is who the real government is. It's very interesting how he's going to China and he's bringing along Elon Musk and Alex Karp and all of these big tech leaders and not a lot of politicians coming along with him. And I think it's, whether we like it or not, what is happening right in front of our eyes is the global government corporatocracy is being established right in front of us. And not only do they already have the pseudo political authority to be making deals overseas or, you know, acting as if they're sovereign entities, we're going to see that codified and solidified and their position actually made real and concrete over time. The Board of Peace has to do with this. The fact that we're moving away from the UN has to do with this. So if you want to understand the global government, imagine instead of the UN with Russia, America, China, Israel, or, you know, Iran, Ireland, like instead of countries, imagine Amazon and Microsoft and OpenAI. And there'll be multinational corporations that essentially have sovereignty. And there are already corporations like this, like the IMF, basically is not under control of any single government. It is a government unto itself. It has the, you know, police forces and extradition treaties. I mean, there's already, through Bretton Woods and the construct of the world order post-World War II, there's already a precedent for this. But I think we're going to see a lot more of this happening, kind of like when I was talking about yesterday, the Prime Minister of Japan. She'll come to America and she'll do the state dinner and she'll meet with the president of the United States and then she'll meet with the real leaders. Then she'll go to dinner with Alex Karp and Peter Thiel and whoever else represents the real power behind the throne, the real authority and the real seat where sovereignty lies. So, and of course, on top of this, you've got the data centers, which are being built by these organizations, these corporations, Oracle, Palantir, these big pseudo-free, pseudo-governmental entities that are building out the control grid for our enslavement. So they're doing that, again, sort of in flagrant disregard to the will of the people or the laws of the United States, because they are, in fact, setting themselves up as the ultimate authority and the true sovereigns of our world. And so the fact that Trump is bringing along a bunch of these people on his trip to China, not exactly surprising, but they're certainly not out for our interest. They have their own interest, and they're simply using America as a vehicle to enrich or benefit themselves. Now, Donald Trump was on his way to the helicopter to go to China for this big state trip. And he, of course, as he's wont to do, stopped by the press gaggle and answered some questions. And has made probably one of the biggest faux pas of his entire political career. If you've been online, you've seen this spread everywhere, because the instant that he made this comment, it went absolutely viral. We'll go to it now. Clip 28. Trump, when asked about the Iran war and the negative economic effects of the Iran war, responds saying, "I don't think about American financial situations." The audio is a little rough, but here's Donald Trump about an hour ago.
Even a little bit. It's the only thing that matters when I'm talking about Iran, they can't have a nuclear weapon. I don't think about American financial situation. I don't think about anybody. I think about one thing. You cannot let Iran have a nuclear weapon. That's all. That's the only thing.
So what the hell was that? So what is that about? What type of response is that for the American president to say? Because I'm sort of two minds. On one hand, let's put the best spin on this that we can. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt. Let's steel man Donald Trump right here. Because I can understand that in his mind, probably what he was thinking, the argument he was making, was saying, this is so important. It's a life or death existential crisis. I didn't think about anything else, because what could be more important than that? And I could understand that. Right. It's like, all right, if your, you know, daughter's about to be hit by a car and you rush over to scoop her up, people are like, did you think about the, you know, economic consequence of that? You're like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I had a life to save. I'm going to save the life and deal with the consequences in the future. OK, so that's the steel man, right? The steel man is Donald Trump is saying, look, this is an existential crisis. It's life or death. Hey, the economy is important, but when you're talking about 100 million people dying in a nuclear flash, sorry, the money's not going to stop me from doing what's necessary. I'm willing to put it all on the table to do what's right. So that's what he was trying to say. I think that's what he was trying to get across. There's a couple problems with that. The main one being that the threat is non-existent. So there's that, right? Yeah, of course, Drudge Report has this red text, because here's the thing. This is, if nothing else, a sign of Trump sort of slipping, maybe not mentally slipping like we saw for Joe Biden, but losing his touch might be another way to put it. Because there's a way to answer this and to get across exactly the same message, but do it in a smarter and more acceptable way. Obviously, on Drudge Report, they have the quote, "I don't think about American financial situations at all. I don't." What? So in a midterm where the economy is like the number one issue for Americans across the board, you don't care. So you recognize that it's bad, but you don't care. Obviously, the better way to say this would say, of course I care about Americans' financial difficulties, but we're talking about a life and death situation. And at the end of the day, I want them to be alive. I want Americans to be able to live and spend their money. So that was my priority. There was a way to say this that would have been more tactful, that would have been more understandable, that would have been better and still would have gotten the message across. But what he's trying to do is emphasize that Iran was and is an existential threat, and they're going to make a bomb, and anybody talking about anything else is just distracting you from the life or death situation that Trump is heroically saving us from. The problem is that's not true at all, according to everybody except for Trump and Mossad. Trump, and Mossad, that is Mossad, told Trump that Iran was trying to get a nuclear weapon and that it would be an existential crisis if they did. Nobody else believes that. Nobody else. This is, we had the story yesterday. Basically, every intelligence community in America has come out saying they're not going for a bomb. They weren't going for a bomb. They were actually obeying to the JCPOA or the newer agreement that they tried to get Trump to sign. They would have probably comported themselves in line with the strictures of that agreement. They aren't and weren't going for a nuclear weapon, had no capability to do so at the time. They could have started up at some point, but why would they do that? Now, so on the face of it, right, he is saying it's worth it to make this sacrifice of the American economy because there's this existential threat. But that existential threat doesn't actually exist. In whatever form it did exist as a potentiality, it has only been made more of a threat following this war. So it's like layers of this, right? It's like layers of absurdity, layers of failure for Trump's rhetoric in this case. Clearly, the message I received, and I think most Americans received, was, I don't care about your economic well-being. That is essentially what he said, which is troubling because gas is creeping up to $5 a gallon these days, and the economy was kind of your main thing. And if anything, would be the thing that would, you know, that Trump could succeed in. I mean, you know, you got questions about getting deportations done or whatever else. The economy was something that Trump focused on and seemed to understand and cared a lot about. So why doesn't he care anymore? This just got announced. Trump's Golden Dome for America missile defense system estimated to cost $1.2 trillion over a 20-year period. Well, we can get into what's involved in that, but you know who's running that, right? You know who's running the Golden Dome digital dome system, right? It's Tom Alexandrovich, the pedophile that was arrested in Las Vegas and then allowed to flee to Israel. He's the one that's coordinating with all of the other countries who are all outsourcing their cybersecurity to the state of Israel, which is insane, which is an insane thing to do. They're going to blow your phone up when it's next to your head. And this is really very, very troubling. And again, it's like, how do we get across the concept that the sky is blue? This is the trouble I have. I'm sitting here going, what do I need to do to explain to the American people that the sky is blue and things fall down when you drop them? Like, because what I'm saying is, how do I explain, how do we get across to people that America is a different country than Israel? You would think that would be enough. You would think I just did it. You would think I wouldn't even need to explain it. Yeah, there's two different names because they're two different countries. But like this is apparently not understood by people in power. We've got a story today of a mayor who's been arrested and charged with being a spy for China, foreign influence. And I get that. I approve of that. I'm in favor of that. I'm in favor of it for every foreign country. There seems to come this weird crossover when it comes to Israel and America, where the people in power genuinely do not see a difference between these two countries. See, what it should be is that America builds our own infrastructure for national security, but we so often outsource it to Israel, and yet it's treated as if it's internal. It's like American politicians will be like celebrating, we got the contract, you know, we will be supplying, you know, security, and it's Israel. And it's like, that's, stick with me here, a different country than our country. Okay? It's a whole different country, a whole different people, a whole different belief system, form of government, morals. Wars that they're in aren't our wars. Laws that they pass aren't our laws. So why is Israel treated like it's a 51st state? Why is it, it's, well, better than that. Why is it treated like it is America plus? I really have to wonder that. Especially when all of the big tech executives going along with Donald Trump, ostensibly representing America in an American contingent, in an American diplomatic envoy to China, why are they all, or a vast number of them, dual Israeli citizens who will often reiterate their loyalty to a foreign state and not America, even if they are wearing the, you know, 3-inch wide grandma brooch with the American flag. It's a little bit obvious where their loyalty actually lies. I'm talking, of course, about like Alex Karp from Palantir, things like that. It's a little bit disturbing that to a lot of people in power, it just seems to not matter whether the people representing America are actually Americans and actually have America's interest first and foremost. Like right now, you've got a story. I had it yesterday. I'm not sure if the crew can pull it up. That, or maybe the day before, Apple is now outsourcing some of the construction of its devices to Israel. And once again, you've got Tim, whatever his name is, Tim Apple up there, you know, shaking hands with the Israeli diplomat, making this a, you know, it's a big smiling thing. Hey, we're bringing jobs back, you guys. It's like back to there, back to a foreign country. Amazing. Thank you, Apple. You're so patriotic. And you got to wonder, okay, what does that mean for safety? What does it mean for safety when we've already seen Israel use small electronic devices to carry out terror attacks and indiscriminately bomb thousands and thousands of people all throughout Lebanon? Are you telling me that Apple has now signed an agreement with Israel to, I don't know, perhaps, you know, build out little bombs inside every one of their devices? Maybe every Apple device will have a kill chip in it, like an episode of Black Mirror. You know, it'll be a matter of Alex Karp pulling up your digital ID, pressing the X button, and, you know, blowing your hand off in an instant. I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. I wouldn't worry so much about this if it was America doing it, but it's not America doing it. It's a foreign country. It's a foreign state who doesn't seem to have our best interests in mind. And yet they're going to increasingly be involved in, and rather in control of, our manufacturing, our big tech companies, our surveillance infrastructure, our digital security infrastructure, the cyberdome. And it's like they're creating the one world government Tower of Babel, stateless morass, just sort of by chutzpah, by confidence, right? That typically any of these things would beg the question, like, hold on, if this is an issue of national security, shouldn't we be in charge of it and not Israel? Well, wait a second. If we're not Israel, we are America and they're Israel, should we not treat them like a foreign country and maybe not consign our computer chip manufacturing to them? Just on the suspicion, on the basis, on the possibility, however far-fetched, that Israel might want to put things in our phone that give it the ability to surveil or attack or manipulate or control us. Do you remember how they got Syria? Do you remember how they ran over Syria in about 2 weeks? The Al-Jolani Brigade, the horde, the Muslim ISIS horde took over Syria. Do you remember how they did it? They did it because the Israelis had tricked the wife of the president into endorsing a phone app that gave soldiers like $5 or $10. And so every single soldier, more or less, in the Syrian army downloaded the Israeli spy app, and it gave them total communication control when the attack eventually launched. So commanders in the field couldn't get their orders. They could get conflicting orders. I mean, imagine you're in the field, an attack has begun. There's an invasion of your country. You're trying to follow orders, and the people sending you orders have hijacked your phone from Israel and are sending you off in a wild goose chase while the, you know, actual army moves in and slaughters the people where you previously were. That's how they won Syria. They won it through a phone app. How did they take out so many of Hezbollah's higher up people? Yeah, how a spyware app compromised Assad's army. They infiltrated the manufacturing process and the supply chain for the pagers and blew up the pagers in your pocket. And now Apple is announcing that the iPhone 17e has a chip developed in Israel. The new iPhone 17 model supports Apple's AI tools, features faster wireless charging, and includes the new C1X modem developed by the company's silicon team. And it's being developed in Israel, meaning that if Israel should so choose, you know, if they're the type of nation that would do something like implant surveillance devices in consumer electronics to get an edge politically, they now have the ability to not just implant things into your phone, implant things into your phone under the root file structure in its hardware, on in its base. So your phone can't do anything without going through this chip. They can implant anything onto your phone through this chip. They could even potentially weaponize the chip, which is still what I suspect they may have actually done with the pagers in Hezbollah. They say that they packed pagers full of explosives. I still don't believe that, because I don't believe that Hezbollah would have gone like 10 years carrying these pagers around without a single time a pager breaks open and there's explosives inside, or they have, you know, a security protocol that detects explosive material. Nothing was discovered for 10 years. I think the explosives packed in the pagers was a cover story for the fact that they could weaponize the lithium batteries in pagers and make them explode without adding any, you know, extra goodness. So they could very well do that with Apple. Again, is that crazy? Is that a crazy thing to suggest? Am I an anti-Semitic conspiracy theorist for simply recognizing a pattern of Israelis using consumer electronics in warfare to defeat their enemies, often targeting civilian populations? And now I see the way in which they continue to move and aggress towards total domination of the American tech landscape, in control of every major manufacturing company and software big tech company, being aligned fully with Israel and being sent by Israel to America with a wad of cash, just like Jeffrey Epstein, only instead of insinuating themselves with scientists and models like Jeffrey Epstein was doing, insinuating themselves with Silicon Valley to get the high-powered positions there, or get blackmail on the people with the high-powered positions there. This is the type of stuff that we aren't even trying to stop, that the American government has been infiltrated to such a degree that they aren't even investigating. And you can go watch interviews with John Kiriakou. You can go find investigations or statements made by congressmen from back in the day about the way in which Israel has infiltrated and continues to be the number one spying threat to America, because they are not our friends. They're our enemies. They're not our allies in any real sense. They are biding their time, in my opinion. So I see all of this coming together. And again, the fact that Donald Trump would come out and so insultingly disregard the economic well-being of the American people because he believes the lie of Iran's nuclear weapon threat, it's insulting. It's ridiculous. And it tells you where his real priorities are, because understand that I can't read his mind. Maybe he thinks the threat is real. Maybe he doesn't. I don't know. But what I know is when he says, I don't care, I didn't think about American economics whatsoever, you can sort of apply that to anything. What he's saying is, I will burn the country down. I will sacrifice my presidency. I will sacrifice the Republican Party. I will sacrifice America itself, its economic prosperity, or the well-being of its people. I will sacrifice all of it because this lie I've been told supersedes it all. It's the only thing that matters. Economic destruction isn't, you know, you can't ride the roller coaster three times, you can only ride it two. It's starvation. It's your life being destroyed. It's having to change jobs and get divorced. It's major catastrophe. And Trump says, that's fine, I don't even think about it, let alone care. That's crazy.
Heard Alex Jones talk about some chemical that makes the frogs gay. Raise your hand. Turns out he wasn't wrong. When frogs were exposed to atrazine, some were chemically castrated and feminized. Genetic males developed female reproductive organs, and some even produced viable eggs. What is less known is this. Human exposure to atrazine in the womb is linked to genital malformations in men. Like when the pee hole isn't in the right place on the pee. And it even could be contributing to shrinking sizes. I am talking about micro becoming increasingly common. Despite this, atrazine, the micro chemical, is present in the drinking water of 40 million Americans. Europe banned it. We didn't. Talk about a war on masculinity.
Put another nickel in the Alex Jones was right jar.
The most important people to have stability and consistency would be businessmen. So he formed this trilateral commission of businessmen and politicians from three.
He's literally talking about how they made the fucking basically the Illuminati. This is so you literally have. So remember when I said this is like a dev video? What the f? It's literally just a dev video. Alex Jones was right about everything.
The most banned man in America, Alex Jones.
And I have to say, your willingness to platform or to have a conversation with Alex Jones, I think was a revolutionary act.
I'll tell you, that fucking guy is right about a lot of shit.
One of the things he was telling me was about fluoride and about the frogs when exposed that went from male to female.
I don't like them putting chemicals in the water that turn the friggin' frogs gay.
I went back to NBC. We had all these fact checkers. It was all true. We found out all this stuff he was saying was true. And here I am across from you, Harvard-educated Johns Hopkins attending physician, saying, yeah, fluoride, just like Alex Jones was saying. Not good. It's crazy.
Alex Jones taught me about this 20 years ago. Listen.
He loves this country. He is a patriot, and he's somebody who we better listen to.
Alex Jones was right. I don't care how you slice it, dice it, flip it up, or rub it down. Alex Jones was right.
Been right about the poison shots and raised the main alarm, and right about the open borders, and right about the wars, and right about the entire agenda. That's why the bad guys want us off air. And that's why it's such a revolutionary act when you take the live feed from Real Alex Jones on X or on Rumble at AJN Live. That's the new site on Rumble. Hundreds of thousands followed just last day. I want to thank all you that did at AJN Live there. Follow us there. Get the free app for the Droid and for Apple for your phone at alexjonesapp.com. This is a revolutionary act. Share it on your email list, your text message list. Tell those you share it to share it. That creates the chain reaction. And then support us at thealexjonesstore.com. When you support us, we are absolutely unstoppable. Become a VIP at thealexjonesstore.com because you get $40 to spend in the store each month, special deals, special offers, special sales on everything on top of it. Cancel any time. Stand with us. All of our victories are shared together. It's because of you. Take action now at realalexjones.com and thealexjonesstore.com.
Back, ladies and gentlemen, this is War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. The Alex Jones Store.com. The Alex Jones Store.com is where you go to support us. And today's the last day to take advantage of the buy one, get one sale. You're getting one free bottle of Shilajit gummies when you buy a bottle of Shilajit gummies, or you can get the ultimate creatine and get a bottle of ultimate creatine when you buy a bottle of ultimate creatine. It's BOGO subs, buy one, get one supplements. The Shilajit gummies, I cannot recommend enough. They're extremely powerful. I love to combine them with the Irish sea moss gummies as well. The capsules are also fantastic. If you don't know what Shilajit is, just look it up. Just go to AI. What the heck is Shilajit? It'll tell you a story that sounds like something out of Lord of the Rings. It sounds like a tale that Gandalf would tell to Bilbo when explaining some sort of magical element, because that's genuinely what it is. It spontaneously arises on the top of the Altai Mountains and the Himalayas. And people who live there noticed that the monkeys that live around there would eat this tar that comes up from the ground and would get energetic and would be jumping around. And so the people thought, all right, well, we'll give it a try. Turns out it's like this amazing superfood. It literally bubbles up from the ground like a miracle. And all you have to do is capture it, purify it. You know, it can have heavy metals. If you get a lower quality version, You know, you don't want to go just like eating off the ground in the Himalayas. You're going to want to go to thealexjonesstore.com and find the product has been refined to the maximum degree, purified to where it's just the essentials and just the most powerful ingredients. Added on top of that, a delicious gummy flavor and the supplements that you need to make it bioavailable so your body can actually take advantage of all the nutrients that it's getting. Shilajit gummies, buy one, get one for absolutely free at thealexjonesstore.com. That sale ends today. Ultimate creatine powder, equally amazing for your body, but really fantastic for your brain. Excuse me, and how it helps to super boost your cognitive function. Ultimate creatine powder is now buy one, get one for free on thealexjonesstore.com. That's thealexjonesstore.com. Go there today, and you can go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. So we got a lot of stories to cover today. Obviously, the war in Iran has some new developments with some new suggestions for, or, you know, proposals for ceasefires and peace agreements, once again being rejected. The consequences of the shutdown of the Strait of Hormuz are beginning to be felt, and we're seeing a lot of people ringing the alarm bell and, you know, sounding the alarm, sending up the sirens about how bad things are getting, especially in India. They say they only have 60 days worth of stored fuel left. And it looks like it may only go on till June. We may see a change in June. We've got some articles. They'll tell you about that. Meanwhile, we're going to talk about what's going on in the UK with Keir Starmer being destroyed in the latest elections and basically everybody around him wanting him to step down, but he's refusing to and continuing like nothing's changed. We'll definitely be talking about what the UK is getting up to these days. And then there's the data centers. The data center discussion has been blowing up on X, and I've been right in the middle of it, fighting with all I've got to make people aware of and recognize and respect what's really happening here. And I'm getting in fights with people that I like, people that I don't usually fight with. Yet there's something about certain topics that I can agree with somebody 99% of the time. Something like data centers comes up, something like Israel comes up. And it feels to me, from my subjective view, like they go off the rails and completely insane, start not making any sense. And really, they all devolve to the same argumentation style, which is pretty simple. It's just to call you stupid, not refute anything that you said, and just hope that the confidence game of you think that's true, you're just too dumb to understand my argument, so you haven't made one. How about you make an argument? How about you tell me literally anything that I say is wrong and then show me how it's wrong? And then we can start there, because the data centers are bad. The data centers are bad. They're not good. They're not necessary. They're not a new innovation in technology that is going to be benign, if not positive, for the American people, because that's how it's being treated. You have a lot of people responding. I think I have a tweet from Joel Berry about this, Babylon Bee guy. And again, it's weird that it's like always the same people. Most of the time, right? Joel Berry, I agree with when it comes to the left. When it comes to things like Israel or data centers, he seems like a complete idiot. It's kind of weird. So he says, nobody in America, I wish I knew who it was, but they don't have the original tweet here. I don't want to credit the wrong person. But basically, a tweet went viral yesterday. Here you go, from Emerald Robinson. That's who it is. And she says, nobody in America voted for data centers. Nobody in America voted for AI. Nobody in America voted for surveillance capitalism. Again, just pointing out that we're having to fight back against something. We're having to try to vote our way out of something we never voted our way into. They never put this to a vote. They never made the argument. They never presented us with a deal and said, here's what we want to do. Here's what you get in return. Can we do this? That never happened. What they said was, you know, oh, crap, you figured out that we're building a data center. Shoot, you weren't supposed to figure that out yet. Shut up, we're doing it anyway. That's basically how it's happened. It's like the beginning of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, where they're gonna bulldoze his house, and they're like, there was a time for you to object. It just, you know, wasn't scheduled. To find how to object, you had to you know, go into a basement that didn't have stairs and get past the leopard into the disused laboratory where the file cabinet is. You didn't know that? You didn't know you were supposed to go find that? Like, that's sort of how they're doing it with the data centers. They're just getting all the plans in place. They're getting everything set up. They're ready to go, ready to hit the button. And then they're like, we got to have a meeting real quick. We're going to have a county meeting. We're going to have a city meeting. The city councilors are going to rush through it, and then we'll get this thing done. And then 200 people show up and try to shut the whole thing down, and it makes the councilors look like idiots or puppets when they drive forward with it anyway. But they really want this just to happen without anybody noticing. Unfortunately for them, we've noticed. We've noticed what they're doing. We've noticed how bad it is for everybody involved, and we're standing up against it. And so, as Emerald Robinson points out, nobody voted for this. Nobody wants this. They never asked us about any of this stuff. They're just doing it anyway. Now, what is she talking about? What she's talking about are the data centers, which are hyperscale data centers, which are unbelievably enormous, take up an immense amount of land, an immense amount of electricity, an immense amount of water, and all these other sorts of, you know, precious resources. It also creates all sorts of noise pollution and light pollution and vibrations that affect the health of farm animals within like a couple miles. There's a lot of big problems. So what is Joel Barry's response to this? What is his snarky, you know, inversion of this perfectly reasonable statement by Emerald Robinson? Joel Barry says, nobody in America voted for the steam engine. Nobody in America voted for powered flight. Nobody in America voted for the microprocessor. And thankfully, no one voted for American technological innovation to be policed by hysterical Karens on the internet. And I responded to this just like this. I mean, people don't actually buy this, do they? I mean, that's not an argument people actually think is good, do they? What Emerald Robinson is pointing out is that these data centers, like, he's like the invention of the steam engine. Did somebody just invent data centers and we're like, no, an idea we don't like? Or is it the tangible physical effect it has when you build 2,000 data centers all over the country without asking permission? Was that, did that happen when the, you know, Orville brothers started flying planes? Was that something that they did? Did that require communities all throughout America to be kicked out of their homes and give up their potable drinking water for them to build airplanes? No, no, they just, it was an invention. So you're conflating an invention with a like brand new ecologically devastating industry that's being created with enormous resources and enormous imposition on the people who live in the areas where the resources are being captured. So what the hell are you talking about? So what the hell are you talking about? They're acting like data centers are just like a creative new creation. It's a new iPad. It's a new iPod, and we're all freaking out about it. Do people actually buy that? And do people actually buy the extrapolation of the, you know, underlying concern that it's like, well, you drive a car to get around, therefore, you're not allowed to complain about a brain chip in your head. It's all technology, right? All technology is equal. And if you oppose one new technology, that means you oppose all new technologies everywhere and are a Luddite and are scared of the future. And so you're just, you know, superstitiously lashing out at things you don't understand. It's an absurd position for them to hold, but they all seem to hold it. All the people arguing against this seem to conflate genuine complaints and concern about the tangible physical impact of these gigantic, enormous, unimaginably sized server farms being built on farmland in their backyard, conflating that with like the creation of a microphone, the creation of the microchip, the invention of the steam engine. Oh, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? Because the question I wanted to ask, the question I genuinely have not heard an answer to yet, is why? Why are we doing this? What is the argument? What is the benefit for us? The only response these people have is to either downplay the costs, right? So I'll sit here and go, well, you're giving up your water, you're giving up your land, you're giving up, you know, you get charged a ton more in electricity. All of this is being subsidized by, you know, federal funds that are going through the Department of Justice into Palantir and OpenAI and all of these AI companies that are building the data centers in cooperation with NVIDIA. What is the benefit? We're spending all of this money. We're doing all of this stuff. Like, people are comparing it to nuclear energy. And they're saying, basically, we could have had nuclear energy, but all of these naysayers, these scaredy cats back in the 60s, were so scared of a little nuclear meltdown that, you know, we shot ourselves in the foot. We could have had a nuclear country, but it was this fear-mongering by these people who were just scared of an uncertain technology. And it's like, okay, nuclear power plants, you know, my response to this is that nuclear power plants have a minuscule but still existent threat and a risk of catastrophic meltdown. And that's what they're, you know, scared of, that catastrophic meltdown. But it's a potential and it can be mitigated. And in all likelihood, nothing bad will ever happen with a nuclear power plant, meaning that that fear that they experience about it would be unfounded. And to not build the power plant on the basis of that fear would be to limit your technological progress on the basis of non-existent threats. With data centers, the threat is not potential. It's not a possibility. It's not a risk. It's an absolute certainty. You cannot build a data center without the energy that you require, without the water that you require, without the imposition on the farm owners or the eminent domain destroying your home. It's not a risk. It's an absolute certainty. These things are incumbent on building data centers. So it's not a risk. It's not an unfounded or baseless or overblown fear. It's a genuine concern and a genuine outrage at people who've already been subjected to it. It's not like people are sitting here going, the data centers are going to be too loud. I think they're going to be too loud. And it's like, what? They're super quiet. You don't know what you're talking about. That would be a baseless, you know, objection. No, what you have is people sitting on their porch going, I can't talk to my neighbors because the data center is so damn loud. And it's just like, so what are you talking about? So you have people, you have real human beings being negatively affected by this thing, having their, you know, home destroyed by this thing, who are objecting to it and saying, hey, look, this doesn't benefit me. It just hurts me. It's hurting me personally. It's hurting our community. It's ruining my life or costing me hundreds of thousands of dollars in the case of a house that you bought, paid off, and now can't sell because it's next to a data center. This sucks. And you have people on the other side going, well, shut up. It's worth it. And then the question is, what? What is worth it? What are we getting? What is the benefit to us? Because the other thing, the conflation that they make, the I cannot help but believe to be deliberate straw manning of the argument, because they have no argument to the actual concerns and objections that are being made, is they once again extrapolate. When I sit here and go, America already has over 4,000 major data center buildings. We already have in America 8 times the amount of the next leading country in terms of numbers of data centers. We already run a major like surplus of the compute power that the data centers bring us. And yet we are like draining lakes, draining aquifers and underwater reservoirs to frantically spend trillions of dollars to build out 3,000 more. Why? Why? And people look at that and they go, don't you realize you're on the internet right now? To which the obvious response is like, yeah, so why do we need 3,000 more data centers? It seems to be working fine, actually. It seems to be able to handle the stress. And the thing is, why does America have to have all of the thousands and thousands and thousands of data centers? Why does it have to be America? And if it's really that just like the traffic explosion and the, you know, us sending text to each other on X, this is literally a Jeremy Kaufman guy. It's like, you idiot, you say there's nothing good about data centers, but you're on X when you say it. And it's like, first of all, I never said nothing good about data centers. I said data centers do not do anything good for the people being affected by the data centers. Duh. Hello. Duh. Go tell the girl we showed yesterday in Georgia. Yeah, sure. Your beloved childhood home is being wrecked so some wires can be strung to the next, you know, SoftBank data center. But hey, the good news is the Netflix that runs fine, it's going to continue to run fine. And you'll be able to, you know, create images of a hot dog flying an airplane 3% faster now. So isn't it worth it? your childhood home being destroyed? Aren't you happy we did that? What? What are you talking about? What is the argument? What is the actual this for that quid pro quo? We take your house in exchange. I guess ostensibly the argument is national security. So then you have to ask, what does that mean? What form of national security? Do you mean surveillance? You mean that it's all about surveillance? You mean that all we're doing is building a giant surveillance grid so that we can feed every second of our every day through the Internet of Things into a giant database so it can calculate outcomes and then alter input to get the desired outcome? Is that what you're saying when you say national security? Other people, you know, this is the Jeremy Kaufman guy. He's a big libertarian. And again, I like this guy. He's one of my favorite accounts on X, to be honest with you. He comes up with stuff that like is totally from left field. It's amazing. I'm not even insulting the guy, but there is a libertarian disability. There's a brain aneurysm or whatever that libertarians have where because it's corporations doing it, they don't care. And that was his response. Basically, it was like, well, if these, you know, data centers are so expensive, somebody's paying for it, it must be worth it. It's like, that's it. That's the argument, is that because they exist, it's good they exist. What? And of course, it's especially absurd because it's obviously government money that's building it. Maybe not at the top, maybe not in the original outlay, but that's because you've got Oracle and OpenAI and all of these AI companies and NVIDIA and all these others who have guarantees for contracts with the DOD, the Department of Defense, to utilize AI in warfighting so that they make their money back tenfold, probably in a year or two. So sure, they're laying out $500 billion to build this stuff. That's private money. But they're only making that investment because it's absolutely assured by the United States government in two ways. One, in that these hyperscale data centers will be used for defense, for surveillance, for control of the American people. So they have agreements and contracts already in place to guarantee that they receive billions upon billions of dollars from the government for use of the hyperscale data centers that they're using. And if they don't, if the contracts don't come true or don't come to fruition and the promises aren't fulfilled, then suddenly you're going to have NVIDIA and OpenAI, the only companies keeping our stock market afloat, at the risk of failure. Gee, what happens next, do you wonder? Do you know? Have you figured it out yet? That they're building companies deliberately to be too big to fail, so that if you try to stop them or try to interrupt them, they're just going to go to the government and demand that you backfill the trillions of dollars that they've pledged? It's crazy. It's crazy. People are not understanding what's going on here. Well, I mean, you drive a car, right? I mean, if you drive a car, then you have no right to complain about a giant data center in your backyard using all of your potable water. Sorry, you have used technology before, so guess you got to deal with it. I mean, these arguments don't make any sense. Then there's an argument about employment, but it's like, again, none of these things make sense for the investment that it costs. If you're just... And eventually it gets down to like, well, it creates jobs. Okay, a hyperscale data center that can be hundreds, if not thousands of acres wide, can be run by 20 to 50 people. They max out at 200 permanent jobs. Your average Walmart store employs 300 people. Now, I understand a cashier at Walmart isn't the same level as some of the people that wouldn't be employed by a hyperscale data center. You're going to have coders and engineers and stuff. It's going to be higher paid positions. But again, the question is this worth it? Is it worth it to create around 100 jobs to spend all of the resources and inconvenience all of the people? Of course it's not worth it. It's ridiculous to say it's worth it. What would be worth it would be employing those same people on like fixing the roads or building dams or trying to eradicate the ticks that are making everybody, allergic to red meat. But no, we're putting all of this effort, all of this energy, and all of these resources into building our digital prison, and that's the obvious reason these things are being built. And I'm going to continue this in the next hour because it's like, I don't know, it's like don't want to use Groundhog Day because that's not really what it's like. But I don't know, a Twilight Zone episode or something? It's like, we've learned all of this, folks. We've been over this. We've spent a decade understanding that the people in power are obviously not going to tell you exactly what they're doing. They're not going to sit here and go, yeah, we're building hyperscale data centers to be the digital panopticon to enslave you, scum. We think of you as animals. They don't say it like that, obviously, but that's what they believe, and that's what they mean, and that's what they're doing. And this is obvious, which is why one of the people I was arguing with on X, you know, said something, and I said, look, I get it. Trust the science. The vaccine was a great job creator. And it's like, oh, well, I don't know. And it's like, well, isn't that the argument? I mean, didn't the vaccine create a bunch of jobs? I mean, you had the people giving out the vaccines. You had to have the, you know, police officers holding the people down to give them the vaccines. You had to have the vaccine manufacturers in the first place. Hell, you had to have the gain of function scientists in China to create the virus, to create the vaccine. So it was a job creator, wasn't it? Or maybe the jobs it did or did not create is not worth the devastating consequences of it, of its release. That's what we're dealing with data centers. So I'm going to remind you, we're going to go back in time and we're going to look at the last couple of years of the World Economic Forum laying out in perfect clarity the way in which they intend to cause scarcity of our most useful and necessary resources to force humanity into a digital prison system where they're constantly surveilled and their every movement can't happen without the approval of the people in power that control the big tech companies. Did you forget about that? Have you not seen the videos where they're talking about how water is a resource that could be very useful for controlling people because, hey, the vaccine, the virus, it can be a little bit vague, but people understand when they're thirsty. Did you forget about the fact that they have given speech after speech after speech about how they intend to commodify every single piece of nature, every tree, every rock, every river, every human being, so that they can fold it into a digital clone of the world and track it like it's a stock market, because they do literally intend to commodify the entire world, including you, your body, the food you eat, and the children that you have. And that's why these hyperscale AI data centers are being built. It has nothing to do with posting on X. It has nothing to do with sending emails. And even if that was the case, here's an idea. Instead of building twice as many data centers as we have now, even though we already have eight times as many data centers as the rest of the world or the next highest country, how about we stop providing the internet infrastructure for 1 billion Indians? How about we offload some of the traffic that our internet is burdened down by making it an American internet? No. Instead, we're going to kill your farm and build a monstrosity in your backyard. It's ridiculous. Wake up!
Huge new mega sale, and it's a fundraiser for the new network. We need your support. Plus, the products are incredible. Up to 40% off on methylene blue tincture and methylene blue caps. We have the best. You're insane if you don't take it. Ultra DNA Revival that has all of the super nutrients in it that supercharge your whole body, like NAD, you name it. Up to 35% off methylene red tincture, the bovine colostrum, the MK Ultra Brain Booster, 30% off all apparel. There's not much market for the apparel. So that is a huge deal. Shirts, hats, hoodies, with the widest selection, thealexjonesstore.com. I need your support. Ultramethylene Blue Gummies, the first run. They're super strong. It's even stronger than, it's the same company, but the way they make it, it's really concentrated when it goes into the gummy. 58% off. That's about to end. And it goes on and on and on. Thealexjonesstore.com. And finally, the sister site of thealexjonesstore.com, realalexjones.com. They just hold back. It's a sister site because we kept it separate from InfoWars. That was the site that went to just build the fledgling Alex Jones network. And so they always hold back 10% of inventory, where it's coins or knives or collectible, you know, limited edition t-shirts or Faraday bags. They hold it back. So there's only a few hundred left of the five different designs, limited edition, laser engraved, World War II, but updated modern, skull crusher, brass knuckles, 10-inch, double-edged, stainless steel, razor sharp. Your last chance to get those at an incredibly low price, only $79. These knives are like $100-something in stores. TheAlexJonesStore.com doesn't have them, only RealAlexJones.com. And there's other deals that are only at RealAlexJones.com, so be sure and take advantage of that and check it out. If something's sold out, The Alex Jones Store, check out RealAlexJones.com. Hour number two, straight ahead. Show the live feeds now.
receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.